touched up on the ground here, north of Goose Island, off Boy Reef. And evidently, we get some oil, and we're going to be here for a while. And if you want, so you're notified, over.
From the Matsu Valley to West Anchorage, downtown to Girdwood, those of you in Prince William Sound, Cordova, Homer, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, and Anchor Point, well, it's time for you to grab your torches and pitchforks and petroleum products, because guess what? We just got screwed. You're listening to News Talk 1080 KUDO, your progressive voice. I'm Shannon Moore. Warren's called in. Warren.
How you doing, Miss Shannon?
You know what, Warren? I'm surviving.
That's good. Miss Shannon, I have to come on the side of the Exxon, and I just feel that mistakes will have mistakes. Did anybody feel that?
Hey, Warren, I'm just going to stop you now. Because I think that you need to go brush your teeth for opening your mouth and not knowing what the hell you're talking about. First of all, you want to side with Exxon because people make mistakes. That's absolute crap. It is not a mistake to leave a barge in dry dock so much and so long that it is iced in. That was the containment booms on that barge. It was illegal for them to even leave the harbor. That is not a mistake. That is negligence. The fact that their radar that they were required to have, they had not even trained their employees to work on, nor was it even switched on. So you want to say Exxon made a mistake? Is that? No, I'm sorry. That is just bald-faced lies. And if I wanted to hear them, well, I'd talk to Exxon. I'd call up Rex Tillerson today and say, how much more sunshine can you blow up my ass before I get a sunburn? Because it's just all lies. So keep drinking the oily Kool-Aid and your right-wing buddies over there who just suck it up in a straw as big as the pipeline. I'm not interested. Greg Pallast is joining us right now, and I'm so glad that he is. He's talked to us several times about this entire fiasco. Armed Madhouse is one of his books, From Baghdad to New Orleans, Sordid Tales of a White House Gone Wild, as well as other books. Greg Pallast, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Shannon, and mourning in this day of mourning, when the people of Alaska have lost 90% of the money due from Exxon. And that's 20 years, and by the way, it might be worthwhile to go back and watch those tapes of the Exxon people saying that they'll take care of all the damage and pay everyone right away. That was two decades ago.
Right. We will make
you whole. By the
way, I
don't
think
they're going to accept paying 10 cents on the dollar. They're going to try to whack that down, too, and drag this out.
Well, that is exactly what they said today, was this goes back to the Ninth Circuit Court, and actually, that's just a cap. They could only decide to charge them $200 million or $17 for all we know. It's up to them now.
Right. And I want to answer the gentleman before who said mistakes happen. Mistakes happen, but this was not a mistake that happened. And I should declare my own interest, which is that I was hired by the Chugach Native Alaska Corporations to investigate. That's what I do. I'm an investigative reporter, but then I was an investigator. But what I'm saying now, I'm off anyone's payroll except the Nation Institute, where I'm an investigative reporting fellow. And I have to tell you that the Exxon Valdez disaster was the result of a systematic fraud conducted by Exxon, British Petroleum, and the consortium members of the Alyeska Pipeline Consortium. People have to understand, tankers run aground all the time, too often. But that doesn't mean that you slime, that every time a tanker goes aground, that you slime 1,000 miles of coastline. You're supposed to have oil spill response equipment, and supposedly you have it right now. Well, the stuff they have right now is the stuff that they promised when they won the right to the pipeline. In 1971, it should be understood that environmentalists were calling for running a land pipe across Alaska and Canada down to the lower 48. But the oil companies didn't want to do that. They didn't want to do that because it was not only cheaper to tanker it, but they didn't want to give the, you know, bring the oil to the lower 48 where it was needed. They wanted to sell it to Japan, which is where all the oil goes now, by the way, just about. And so what happened was that they needed a port at Valdez, and they said, when environmentalists said, you know, this is really dangerous, what if you have a spill there? And they said, no problem, because we'll have the latest spill equipment. They promised it to Congress under oath. They put it in their environmental impact statement, which they signed under penalty of law. They signed statements that equipment was left out in the Prince William Sound. In fact, the tanker ran aground at Bligh Reef. Under the Exxon's own plan, they're supposed to have emergency spill equipment, that rubber boom that goes around the boat.
Right.
They're supposed to have it right on Bligh Island. I mean, right there. I mean, literally a stone's throw from where the tanker went down. If they had it there, this would have been page five news one day, and that would have been it, because they would have thrown the rubber skirt around the ship, taken off the oil. That would have been that. It would have been a nasty day, but not the not the destruction that we saw.
Well, you know, I left Sitka right after that happened, along with hundreds of other boats in the fleet that I was fishing in, and we were headed north and watching, of course, listening on our marine radios the weather report, and we knew that there was going to be a northeasterly storm, and we were like totally freaked out because we said this is going to blow that all the way to Kodiak if they don't get it contained, which they didn't get it contained. Had they done that, we would not have been dealing with the thousands of miles that were actually hit.
That's right. It's not an accident. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident at all when you deliberately lie. In other words, you have to understand is that guys like, and let's name some names, Bill Shire of the Alyeska Consortium, who signed off documents saying that the spill equipment was ready to go. Dan Lawn, a great Alaskan hero of the DEC, was standing on the ship and said, where's the containment barge? Because the stuff was missing on Bligh Island, but it should have been loaded on a barge. They signed documents that no oil would be shipped out of that terminal unless the barge was in the water and ready to go. They stone cold lie. The barge was under ice. It was offloaded and under ice. They stone-cold lied. They were supposed to stop the oil shipments until the barge was back in the water and ready. They didn't. They just wanted to grab the money. Today, Justice Souter said that punitive damages shouldn't be paid because this was a because Exxon didn't profit from the spill. The hell they didn't. They went 16 years, and they saved billions, literally billions of dollars by not having the spill equipment, by being absolutely profligate. They were supposed to have emergency spill response crews. They had hired the Chugach natives to fulfill that job. After a couple years, they fired them, so they weren't there when the spill hit in 89. They're supposed to have equipment out. They didn't have it. They're supposed to have the barges out. They didn't have it. They're supposed to have a second barge. They didn't even build that one.
So they lied and
systematically lied, and then just 9 months before the spill, one of their vice presidents, Theo Polasek, let's use names again, told Exxon, British Petroleum, ARCO, the whole gang, that he had to have spill response equipment because he says we don't have the equipment if there is a grounding in the middle of the sound. We don't have it. He actually put it in writing 9 months before the spill. British Petroleum actually said, well, maybe we ought to put out some equipment, and they were vetoed by Exxon. Exxon went out of its way to say, you're not spending a dime to protect the Prince William Sound. They literally vetoed it just before the spill. This is not an accident. This is not some mistake. It's not human error. It's not about a drunken skipper who hits a reef. You know, that story's got to go, man. That story's just got to go because that's not what happened. Hazelwood, the captain, was below decks. He was snoozing off his snout that he put on in Valdez. You know, it's not like a drunk at the wheel of a car. Okay.
No,
the
when you're asleep
was,
in the bunk.
That he was below decks. The third mate was operating the ship, who had no idea how to do that, and furthermore, didn't have the Raycast radar on, which you know, which is like the equivalent to today of a GPS, which they had, but at that time it wasn't the $200 GPS, which would have also stopped, prevented the spill, which we have today. Then it was a $2 million system, and they didn't have it on because it was broken. It was too expensive to train people to use. If it had been on, and the law of the sea is if you got it on the ship, you have to have it turned on, they would have never hit that reef. This is deliberate, penny-pinching ways to pump the bottom line for Exxon. And then, of course, by the way, when the pipe did shut down, the price of oil went up. They even profited that week from the spill.
They did.
It is an outrage.
They've never not shown a profit since the spill. I mean, that quarter, they had huge earnings. And then we were like, how is this possible? Well,
they made money because they didn't spend the money. It was when it came down to protecting the public. They didn't spend the money.
Well, I was just talking to Ricky Ott, who I know you're familiar with from Cordova.
And terrific. Brilliant investigator.
Yeah, and we were talking about the compensatory damages now being equal to the punitive thanks to this ruling. And the fact is that the compensatory damages, they didn't even pay, that a huge amount of it came from an insurance company.
Well,
you know, that Exxon
that
had.
That the court used some serious arithmetic flim-flam, which is to say, oh, we're knocking it down to the punitive damages to the compensatory damage. That means the actual damage. Well, the actual damages, by Exxon's own calculation in their annual reports, not to the court, but to their own annual reports, was that they have paid over $3 billion to correct the damage. So the actual damages, punitive damages, are supposed to relate to actual damages. And the courts have basically said three times actual damages is the limit, and the actual damage, according to Exxon, was $3 billion. They were liable under normal rules to punitives of $9 billion. Now, what's happened here is that Exxon waited 20 years. Now, when I worked with the natives and I spoke with them, again, let me make sure that you get the villains' names down. When I spoke to Otto Harrison, who is Exxon USA manager, you know, he said, look, the spill's the best thing that ever happened to Alaska.
I've heard that. I've actually had people say that before.
I met with him, and he said, listen, and the general counsel of Exxon, another guy you should know, the general counsel of Exxon said, we will outlive you. Basically, Exxon is a corporation. It's immortal. But the natives and the fishermen are not immortal. You guys will die. We can, and they even said, by the way, they predicted it exactly. I got to give it to them. They said, you won't get your money for 20 years. They wanted people to take pennies on the dollar. Pennies on the dollar because they said, we can litigate this for two decades.
Well,
that's exactly what they've done.
Which is exactly why the whole concept of corporate personhood should not exist, because they can outlast us, and they are immortal to a certain extent because they can last and last and last. So,
well, you've got things you can do in Alaska. First of all, you don't lose the right to tax them, so you can... You can say, we're going to set up our own fund to compensate people, and we're going to tax the company.
And tax all of them.
Right now, oil is at $140 a barrel. What is Alaska getting out of that? Okay, you have to ask yourself, where is your share? Every other country in the world, every other oil-producing state in the world, and Alaska is an oil-producing state, every other oil-producing state from Ecuador to China to Britain to Norway has a windfall profit tax. This is when the price of oil goes up, they get the big hunk of it. In fact, British Petroleum, just so you know, the people of Britain still own 49% of that thing. So when oil goes up to $140 a barrel, 49% of that shipping out of Valdez is going to the British Treasury. Why not the Alaskan Treasury? All you have to do is raise the taxes. It's that simple. I mean, Obama has called for a a tax of 20% of the price over $80 a barrel. That's peanuts, but at least he's putting it out there. I mean, John McCain is not only saying no new taxes on oil companies, but let's do some more offshore drilling.
Well, not only that, but he's also gone to the ridiculous place of saying, you know, 100 more years of war. And I'm looking at, you know, the New York Times just came out last week
and
that
there's war against Alaska that I'm concerned about.
Well, there's that, but also, I mean, you look at ExxonMobil, Shell, Total, BP, and Chevron are about to sign no big contracts with the Iraqi government to be producing their oil right now. That's, I mean, you look at these corporations and this sort of colonization, regardless of if you're Iraq with these no-bid contracts or you're Alaska coming in here and being able to be protected in our own courts with the abuses that have happened, and as you said, no accident. At what point do we just, like, you know, run up the flag here?
Well, yeah, that's what you need. You need to stand up for Alaska. It's basically the oil corporations versus the rest of us. We have an oil war in Iraq. We have oil destruction in Alaska. We have threats against the shorelines of the lower 48. Okay, guys. And by the way, what goes around comes around. I mean, let me tell you, as many experts told me, one of the reasons we lost the city of New Orleans is not, as some people said, well, how come those people, meaning black people, live below sea level so close to the Gulf of Mexico? And the answer is, New Orleans was not built near the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico was moved to the city of New Orleans by the oil industry, which destroyed 200 miles of mangrove buffer. That's what's been going on. You cannot trust your lives and your livelihoods to guys whose number one job is to turn a buck. That is not in their interest. It is very much a profit center to cut safety costs. Every dollar you cut from safety and oil spill response is a dollar to the bottom line. So when Souter says this is not a profit-making act, the grounding, he is dead, dead wrong. They saved billions, and now they're walking away chuckling. It's so low. It's as if they got a... You have to understand, the amount that they're paying now, half a billion, even if they get hit with the max, with the new max, that's like a permit to spill.
It is.
And if they said, okay, listen, we'll just put up a half billion, and we want the right to not have safety equipment, and we're just going to spill like crazy. Understand, one of the things that they avoided doing until 89 is they said, because of all this spill equipment we have, we don't need to have double hulls. You know how much that saved these guys? An absolute stone fortune. They didn't have to have double hulls because they claimed all this safety equipment, which they didn't have.
And it's not lost on me that there was the tanker named the Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's like this administration.
This is the only Secretary of State we've had who can carry 35 million gallons of oil.
And
I mean, this is one of the problems. I mean, we have an oil polluted government. Not just oil-polluted beaches. We have an oil-polluted government, and that is a dangerous, ugly business. And you cannot. And plus, you know, I mean, one thing that I'd like to point out is that the surge, the so-called wonderful surge in Iraq, has knocked out a million barrels a day from Iraqi exports. And that's what was the big impetus to increase the price of oil. You cannot divorce the war from the price of oil. You cannot set Iraq's oil fields on fire. Iraq was the world's number two producer of oil after Saudi Arabia, the number two producer of oil, and we basically turned it into a non-producing state, and the oil companies just love it. What we did was we knocked down the supply, the world supply, and when supply is down, prices up.
Well, the reason wasn't to go get their oil, it was to stop it.
That's right. It's something I've been trying to get many of my progressive friends to understand. People in the oil industry and people at the wrong end of the oil industry perfidy know this. The oil industry is not in the business of finding oil for us to make it cheap. They're in the business of finding the oil and cutting off the supply. When those guys talk about going to the Arctic wildlife refuge. They aren't talking about pulling the oil. They're talking about controlling it. Everything is about control.
Well,
they only let it out in enough bits to maximize their bottom line, but not so much as to bring the price down. That's the game.
Well, Greg Palast, I know that you're very, very busy, and I'm at the top of the hour, but I appreciate you so much coming on with us on this dark day in Alaska.
Okay, Shannon.
Take care. Greg Palast, our guest for the last little bit here. Hey, you're going to want to stay tuned to Cece, you know. She's covering this as well. Actually, I'm her guest for the first bit of her show. And thanks so much for joining us. We'll be on this again tomorrow at 1:30. 1:30. Write it down. Until then, this is Shannon Moore. I'm just a girl from Homer, painting a red state blue, one stroke at a time.